Welcome everyone to this interview where I'm super excited to be talking with Dr. Isaac Elias. And we're going to be talking about how anxiety is in a way a symptom of a disconnection from ourselves, from our heart, and how the real resolution or part of the resolution for anxiety is a deeper connection to ourselves. Dr. Isaac Elias is a leading expert in the field of integrative medicine, specializing in cancer, detoxification, immunity, and complex conditions. He is a respected physician, researcher, best-selling author, educator, and mind-body practitioner. Dr. Elias partners with leading research institutes, including Harvard, National Institute of Health, Columbia, and others, to co-author studies on integrative therapies for cancer, heavy metal toxicity, and others. So, Isaac, welcome. Thank you for joining me again. I always enjoy our conversations together.
Yeah, thank you so much. I love our conversation, and here is another one, so I'm really looking forward.
Yeah, good. Well, look, why don't we start with giving a little bit of context of your perspective on anxiety. So maybe how would you define anxiety, and what are some of the core pieces in that perspective?
Right, so when we look at anxiety, we can look at the whole slew of emotional reaction, you know, reactivity to life. And I want to look at it from an energetic point of view. I want today to emphasize a little bit my Chinese medicine background, and I got my medical background, my Chinese medicine, my naturopathic, my healing, my meditation background. So I want to start with the energetic background. Really, an emotion is a result of our response in time. Is our response to our experience of time. Ideally, we flow with time. We flow that with time. So we don't hold to time, but we are always present because we're always flowing, right? Like my introduction that I told you that I'm going to introduce was the future. I gave it and now it's the past. So if you hold to something, you get stuck. You flow with it. And usually our life experience, our reaction is a mixture of going to the past, which brings feelings like regret and sadness and guilt, holding to the present, the sense of holding that we can talk later because it often happens even if we are meaning to change something, and I'll talk about it. Holding to the present very tight, which creates obsessive behavior and compulsive behavior and ruminating, or projecting into the future. Anxiety is really a projection into the future. So it's something that hasn't happened yet. We are anxious about something that is going to happen. And sometimes when the stimulus is very, very big, you know, my God, somebody is chasing us and we are next to a river and there is a huge stream and we barely know if we can pass it. Okay, yeah, it's a good reason to be anxious, you know. And we get, it's a reaction and we let go of it. But when it reproduces itself for various reasons that I want to explore today, we start having like an anxiety behavior, an anxiety personality, where very small triggers create this response.
What are some of the roots of this? So there's this response that's happening and in a way where we are in that perception of time. But what are some of the triggers or the roots that can drive that reaction?
Right. So going back to my opening explanation, if we use traditional Chinese medicine, the reason why I picked to start with it, because really TCM in its origin, not so much anymore when it studied very much in syndromes, in diagnosis, in a similar thinking to Western medicine. This is hot, this is cold, this is congested, this is weak. This is putting substance into a movement. Chinese medicine is really studied very deep our relationship to time and space. So we talked a little bit about time, past, present, future, and space is different parts in the body. And how they really relate to us. So we talk that anxiety, we are projecting into the future. But why would we project into the future more than needed, more than really, more more than is really necessary. It's often because we are triggered by an experience from the past. You know, and you and I talked in the past about PTSD and trauma. So we are anxious about a certain situation. For example, we are crossing the street and there's no issue, and suddenly a car almost runs us over. Oh, we step back. The next time we come to cross the street, we have a certain anxiety because of what happened to us in the past. And again, a car almost runs us over. Third time, we'll be afraid and anxious. And these are two feelings, by the way, that mix themselves many times because of what happened. So here is a place where we are really, our behavior and our journey in life is really dictated by things that happened to us in the past. And within it, different organs in the body will trigger a different response. So we can be anxious because we are very exhausted and burnt out, and we have a deep fear of something. So that's, for example, a kidney feeling. And so it's one organ that we pay attention. And again, I'm not going to focus only on this, but to start. Or we can be anxious because we feel a great responsibility to take a leadership on something, and it's a big task. Or we can be anxious because we are worried about something. Or we can be anxious because we're trying to please someone. And so all of them, they lead to a reaction that looks the same, may express itself in the same way, but its roots are very different, which means truly changing it and not treating it topically. And many treatments, if it's medication, if it's behavioral change, it's learning to breathe, they are helpful, but they are really putting a band-aid. It's changing our day-to-day behavior so we're not run by the anxiety. When we understand a little bit of a deeper root, and this is from a medical perspective and holistic, you know, energetic medical perspective, where there's a whole other level of the mind that I don't know how much we'll touch today, that really is at the source of this. Once we understand this, we can not only affect anxiety, we can start affecting the underlying causes of anxiety in our body, somatically, in our experience of time. And there you get a much better, you know, long-lasting effect. And so all of these are examples where we actually look at a certain symptom, but its root can be very different. And of course, on top of it, Alex, comes the whole idea of where is the anxiety trigger. So hopefully, I mean, sometimes, not hopefully, it's from this life's event. But often it's a genetic and epigenetic predisposition, right? I'm sure you see somebody is coming and you get to see the grandparents, the parents and the children. And oh my God, you see three generations of anxiety like driving each other, right? It's like, so especially here is the idea of epigenetically, because genetics are hard to change. But what determines which genes are going to be on and be off, it's really a result of behavioral traits and life experiences in previous generations that have been passed to us, but also gives us the opportunity to really change. Now, the last part, which is not often discussed, is the relationship between this behavior and our immune response. Our immune response not only to diseases, our immune response to life. So somebody who is anxious will have the alarm turn on much earlier than the average person, right? So we take this analogy into the immune system. We look at our white blood cells, into our macrophage, into our lymphocytes, and we see when are they going to trigger that something is wrong. So we can have, on the other extreme, people that are very apathic. They don't respond to anything. Not because they are deeply fulfilled, but because they've numbed themselves. And that's the people that, from a medical point of view, trying to make a connection for people between this and health issues, everything feels okay. They are not engaged anymore in the outside world. For example, you and I talked about the important civil right to vote, even if you don't want to vote for someone, right? Well, your system is engaged to care about what's going to happen in the world. Somebody who is not engaged will say, what's the point to vote? It makes no difference. I'm making no difference. And then you get an immune system that doesn't respond. And one day you wake up and suddenly you have cancer. Where did the cancer come from, you know? How come the immune system didn't see it? On the other end, you get an immune cell that is in total anxiety. And it all the time goes and jumps. Oh my God, how are we going to manage? Look, there's going to be a problem. And either the body listens to it or tries to isolate it, to box it. And many people with anxieties try to box their anxiety, right? Kind of not deal with it, and everything is okay. So for example, this is really what allergy is about. What is allergies about? It's about overreacting to something that we are not supposed to react to, right? So a classical thing that they tell in Chinese medicine is you got a caravan in the desert, you know, 10 days away. And you don't know if it's coming your way. You don't know if it's going to try to attack you. So you wait for it to come back so you can see it. You can look at it, you know. But somebody is already anxious 10 days before when the chance of them coming to you and not going another way is like less than 1%. So this is an example of really our effect in time and space. And then which organ system, which predominant emotion we are going to use to fuel the anxiety and to have the anxiety fuel, this relates to the balance between our organs, which relates to our emotional balance, psychological balance, genetics and epigenetics. So it's a real complex picture, yeah. If you dare go into it. Yet it's actually really simple when you are able to just see it. You know, then it's like for me, I just see it, just like I look outside and I see the view, you know, and then it helps you to really navigate how to make a difference.
And Isaac, how important is identifying the root of the anxiety for addressing the anxiety? Like from your perspective, like there's these different sort of jigsaw pieces that are coming in to make up that experience.
Right.
Is it that we can just address the anxiety, or from your perspective, do we also need to identify what the trigger or what the root is?
Absolutely. Identifying the root is the key of really transforming it. And in this sense, it's not only identifying, is our relationship with the identification, right? And it's a lot of your work. So you got the classical psychology, the pathopsychology based psychology, where somebody has a problem and they spend a lot of money and a lot of years digging is what got screwed up that created them, and then oh my God, I found out what screwed up, and now they identify with what got screwed up, and if they don't have a release system, my God, you know, it's like they're now not living at the present; they're trying to digest something, and why did they do it? Okay. We have to understand what triggers anxiety is a survival response. We don't feel safe. We don't feel balanced. We don't feel at peace. And the body, it has the innate ability to survive at a great cost. You know, it's my whole approach of the survival paradox that I'm going to barely touch today. So the root of anxiety, whatever it was at the time, was the best thing we could have done for the situation. You know, it's really a pro-symptom. It's a reaction that kept us alive. Sometimes it's something very small. There's only a fire and we pull the hands back. Sometimes you hear from hostages in captivity, they get these enormous resources, you know, to stay alive and to adjust the environment and to, you know, it's remarkable because they don't know where it came from. It's a survival drive. Then the stimulus ends, they come back home, and then they are wrecked because the whole stress comes out. So when we can identify with the pattern, and then we can accept it instead of fighting it, and it's the trick here, Alex, and of course it resonates with what you do, is to somaticize this, to feel it. And you either somaticize it by connecting with your body. And the deepest way is if you can truly let go of it through meditation. not through mindfulness, because mindfulness is not this level of meditation that will change this. Mindfulness will slow things down, will bring us to the present, and will lower the fire of anxiety. But if you think, why am I saying about mindfulness? Because in mindfulness, we are observing something. And when we observe something, we hold to it. So this is a concept of holding to the present. In meditation, we often hold to the present. It's much better than in this approach, than jumping back and forth to past to present, but it's not a solution. So in its root is acceptance. And we are physiologically built to react and survive in every cell in our body. So again, we have only a short time and I don't want to get carried away on this, but when I treat people, my own experience, when I teach a deeper level of open heart medicine, especially when it's face to face and I can actually work with the people and do some healing, even in big groups, then this sensation is not only when our heart open and we relax. You want it to go all the way to your cellular levels. And it will go to your cells in the areas that are not anxious, right? If we feel the anxiety here, we may feel our hand really relaxed, right? But can we feel the relaxation here? Because the area that is holds the trauma, because we're really driven by trauma. And then you and I talked about it, and you, when I interviewed you, you gave this nice analogy. It can be something very small. You said, like, you say something in class and somebody insults you. It doesn't have that you had a terrible physical or sexual trauma, which of course is much stronger and has a bigger effect. It can be small things. So we need the tissue that holds the trauma to accept that everything is okay. So for me, for example, in my book, The Survivor Paradox, I talk about how pain that I had for 50 years went away when I connected with the trauma of my grandfather with the Holocaust, the 10 out of 12 siblings got killed by Hitler, and nobody talked about it. And I'm named after him, I'm the first child. And once I let it go, not only I healed because I was holding his epigenetic trauma, but my mother changed without me talking to her. So that's a multi-generational trait. Yeah. So this is really about the root creates a scar. And for us to feel open and flowing, we have to heal the scar. It can be a physical scar, which we inject with an anesthetic. And amazingly, the scar gets smaller and never goes back to the same size 100% of the time. And I've done, and other doctors have done hundreds of these. Or what you do is you work, we go in and we unwind the psychological, the emotional scar. So it's in its basis, our body is equipped to do it. Why? Because every cell in the body has a boundary where it decides what comes in and what goes out. Decide what is good for it and what is toxic for it. And it has a survival mechanism. But the cell also knows that it needs to produce things for its neighbors, for its environment, right? There's a mutual support. But the one organ that goes totally different and say, I accept everything. I accept all the suffering and difficulties that cells have had is the heart. The heart takes all the blood. So acceptance is in the root, right, of letting go of what happened. And we are built physiologically to accept. Then if we do it properly, we respond with love and compassion and nourishment instead of anxiety. So everybody talks about the loving heart, right? But the real secret of the heart is really acceptance. If we don't have acceptance, our love will be conditional.
Yes.
Because it will be love towards something we accept and not love towards something that we don't accept. And of course, if something triggered anxiety, we're not going to accept it, you know?
I'd love to get some more clarity on what you were saying about the difference between a sort of mindful practice where you're cultivating awareness and this deeper practice where you're really going more into the heart and the core. What obviously I recognize this is probably a bigger question than can be answered in the time we have, but just a few pointers. Like, what does that meditation practice look like that allows us to find our path deeper to that source?
I'm gonna answer by projecting into you.
Great. Okay.
Here's what I'm gonna do. You asked me the question, okay? And when you asked me the question, you were focusing on the question. But Alex, which I kind of enjoyed watching, in the same time, you had a quality of spaciousness to it. Did you notice this mixture? The spaciousness is a quality which is not part of mindfulness. It's a part of freedom. Okay? So right now, as you are listening to me, you're listening to me here, but you're also listening to me here, right? You can feel it, right? This mixture. You're a little bit, you have a tendency, you know, because you work a lot with people, to a little bit it's more here, but you're actually listening here. When we move from our head to our heart, that's a big difference. So the heart is not only focusing on here, that's putting the mind in the heart. No, it's moving the heart to everywhere. So when I talk to you, I hear you and I think from my heart. Okay. So I'm trained to do this. Because why? The heart never stops. The heart has no time to be mindful of something. It'll be mindful of something for 60 seconds. We're dead. The heart always flows, always flows, always flows. So a mindful meditation is critical in our age, time and age, because we are all anxious, and we are anxious because the time span between two events in our life has been shortened by thousands of times compared to 150 years ago when we sent somebody a mail with a pigeon probably, and maybe, you know, 4 weeks later, something will come back. And now, man, I'm 1 minute later to my Zoom call. What am I going to do, right? How come you didn't answer me, right? We're like 30 seconds later. So the time span doesn't give us time to really respond. And what does it mean physiologically? We don't have a time to take a deep breath, right? We have to exhale right away. Okay, we got it. Here it is. We got it. Here it is. Instead of just relaxing. So mindfulness is remarkable because we slow our breath, we slow our mind. We use our neurosis to focus on one thing instead of focusing on 100 things. And that's a gradual path. Yeah. The path of freedom is an on-off path. It's a completely different highway. It's tricky because it's on-off. It takes a certain, it's almost a miracle that you yourself or someone points to you this amazing door that we may go through and we'll never know we went through. And once you go to the door, it can be a one-time thing, but it changes your life. Once you go through this door and you are lucky enough, some people will say blessed enough, to be able to find this door whenever you want, then life is never the same. Even if you get anxious, life is never the same. And that's really the secret part of open heart medicine. Open heart medicine is a very modern, easily to understand coin name I gave to very, very esoteric meditation training that I trained for decades, having the privilege to be the doctor and one student of the greatest meditation masters in the Himalaya, that none of them are with us anymore. And sitting, you know, a one-on-one and groups of, you know, 5-6 people for weeks and weeks, and studying and meditating and having this relationship of a patient, doctor, and trust. So that's why I'm excited about talking about it. But yeah, I love that this is a question you picked, because you kind of saw, you know, it's a whole discussion you and I need to have, because, but I just want to touch it. So the mindfulness is important for us to slow down. And then actually we need to take this slowing down and we need to just burst it away, you know, and just, but then you have the freedom, you know, then you have the freedom.
Yeah, I really like your description of, rather than the mind being in the heart, like the heart becomes almost the sort of the meeting point between us and everything else that's there. What helps us get closer to that? Because in a way, like it strikes me that anxiety is really the opposite of that, right? It's almost like the more we're in anxiety, the more we're in our head, the more we're disconnecting from our heart. The more we're in our heart, the safety that we need, which is in a way which is the opposite of the anxiety, the more contact we have with that. So what helps this transition?
So it's practice. It's first being aware of it and being aware that the reason why it's so hard to train to always be calm and be spacious, because the job of the head is to analyze, is to discriminate, it's to protect, it's to watch through all the senses. The job of the heart is to accept whatever, everything is okay, no worries, there is no anxiety, connect with the universe with the breath, and give without discrimination. So different. So just by understanding it, it's one level. So this is a mental understanding, very basic. Then the second level is when we breathe, regardless if we breathe deep through the diaphragm, and it's really good physiologically, and that's why there are different techniques of breathing, that we also breathe to our heart. We breathe, we take the time, even if we breathe deep, often they say just breathe to our heart. No, you can also breathe deep, but the focus is your heart, and what it does, it creates coherence between the brain waves and the heart, you know, the Heart Math Institute, but it's ancient meditation technique. And the third thing is somatically, we can just put our hands in our heart. It's a remarkable experience. And you can feel, when you put your hands, you'll feel this amazing heat. And if you just relax into the heat, you see it spreading everywhere. And once we do it, the electromagnetic of the field of the heart becomes harmonized. It's 100 times bigger than the brain's electromagnetic field. So it touches not only every cell in our body, it touches people around us. And this concept that it goes 4 feet or 5 feet or 10 feet, it's a field, it's endless. It just becomes weaker and weaker. So if we're not sensitive enough, we don't feel it. And it gets amplified in bodies of water, right? So, you know, you sit in a group of people and you teach them, and you can feel it, like I told you about the story about changing, about the healing of trauma. I did a one-day retreat in Israel, and I let them have their own chain, and at some point, and suddenly it happened to everybody together. How, why? It amplifies itself. And that's the value of these summits. You and I are talking about it. The more we can talk from our heart, the more people can connect, the more there is an effect, even through a Zoom medium. That's the first part. The second part, we really contemplate the idea of acceptance. And we contemplate the idea of acceptance by understanding that there are always difficulties. There's always a reason for anxiety. And these reasons are sent to us from the cells who don't want something. And the heart just accepts. And it accepts because we recognize or we understand logically that everything is changeable. Everything is impermanent. In the heart, how the heart knows it? It always flows. The blood is never the same blood. The moment the heart tries to fixate on something that is flowing and changing, we are dead. That's really the heart of survival. So now we understand that impermanent is in the basis of it. The deepest level, hard to come by, but really the true transformative is to understand that the root of acceptance, that regardless of the manifestations, right? Now it's a meditative concept, but it's a physiological concept. We get blood from the liver. We get blood from the kidneys. We get blood from the brain. Very different compounds, right, Alex? Sure. They all come to the heart. But what's the equalness of all of them that allows the heart to accept all? That they are all changeable. In Buddhism, you'll say they are all empty of true nature. So recognizing the changeable nature of everything melts any negative and reactive emotion away. Once we do this and we connect with the selfless role of the heart first gives blood everywhere, the aorta is rigid, only then it relaxes and feeds itself. And where does it do it, Alex? Outside the heart, totally selfless. But if you don't take care of yourself, if there's no self-love, there's no love for others because you haven't nourished. When you nourish others and you are relaxed, and the heart opens, you're nourishing yourself. Very different than narcissism, right? When we talked about world leader the short time ago. So
Isaac and I had an interesting conversation before we started recording. It involved a fair bit of politics. So, yeah. But best we keep that off camera.
Exactly. So this is a journey, but it's an amazing journey because it always changes. Why does it always change? Because the heart always flows. And when the heart gives better nourishment to the cells, what happened to the cells? They feel safe. They feel loved. Then their membranes change. How do they change? They change the receptors on the cell membrane. They give a message to their DNA to produce different proteins. And then mitochondrial function works better. Then, wow, we're not as tired. We don't have as much byproducts. We communicate better between the cells. Suddenly the kidney is improving. The liver is improving. You know, mental function is improving. So we use supplements, we use herbs, we use acupuncture, we use medications. but the mind drives everything.
Yeah.
Hardest to get to, then the mind drives our perception in time. We started our discussion. Then comes all the techniques and the psychology and the emotion, which has great value. But if you can connect all these levels, then anything and everything is possible because everything is changeable.
I really like what you said, Isaac, about the sort of free-flowing nature of the heart. What was in my mind is that, in a way, when we're in a pattern of anxiety, a lot of what's happening is like a clinging on. Like we're trying to keep things the same, consistent. There's a fear of anything being different. And in what you're saying around the sort of natural free-flowing quality of the heart, there needs to be a relaxation of that controlling pattern, right? Like a surrender to the wisdom of that natural flow.
Right. So if you are now talking to a traditional Buddhist teacher, will tell you, Alex, of course, what you describe is grasping. Grasping is a root, right? If you look at Buddhism, grasping is a root of suffering. And you just defined it from a very practical psychological point of view. So people, oh, what do they mean with grasping? Well, Alex just told you what they mean. They hold to things. They don't want things to change. Holding to things and not wanting them to change while they are supposed to change is called survival. That's what survival. Survival is not...
It's also called suffering, isn't it?
Exactly. This is a survival paradox, right? The survival response called the suffering. And one of the classical responses to survival response is imbalance is anxiety. Absolutely. And the idea of impermanence is also that whatever we are anxious about is going to go away in one way or another. Nothing ever stays the same. Good things don't stay the same. And difficult things don't stay the same. Now, the interesting thing, when we have an amazing life experience, when we have an amazing meditation experience, it's actually much harder not to grasp to it because it's very pleasant. We want it. When we have a bad experience, it's in one level, it's easier to kind of let go of. But we don't really let go of. We push away and we hold it away all the time. So now instead of grasping, we're just pushing it away, right? It's a kind of grasping. And it's about just opening up and just whatever comes, we're going to use it as fuel for the fire of an open heart, love and compassion, because that's what the heart does. So the beauty of it and why it's so effective and easy to learn is because physiologically we do it anyway, no matter how we respond emotionally. Otherwise, we wouldn't be talking now, we wouldn't be alive. And because we're doing it physiologically, we're taking a ride on something that is already happening.
Yeah. You mentioned about a bit earlier about generational trauma and how that can get passed down through different generations, and how, you know, both I think from a kind of learnt behavior point of view, that one inherits the anxieties of their sort of parents and grandparents or so on. But it's also more than that. And I think that's also what you're speaking to, that there's a kind of epigenetic or a kind of way that that's stored in the system. But I think what sometimes the conclusion people then come to is, well, if I've inherited that, like if it's genetic, there's nothing I can do about it. Like I'm just a victim of that circumstance. And I'd love you to talk a bit more about how learning to live from this heart-based perspective and place, how it's actually, or it's not just about making life easier in this moment, it's also impacting and supporting the healing of not just our history, but the larger history.
Yeah, it is really what drives me to talk about all of this. And for me, epigenetics was like an amazing relief because I was talking about it for decades from my experience. And then epigenetic came and supported it. So I was no longer this crazy guy talking about it. So when you have a more experience, it is based on experience from the past that are projecting into the future, right? When we have an anxiety about something that is going to happen in 2 days, our energy is going to affect what's going to happen in 2 days. And when we go back to the past from 2 days in the future, it's affecting how we feel now. So one of the classical Buddhist meditations is the practice of Tonglen, of sending and receiving. We take in the suffering of others. We start with ourselves. And we use the heart to send white light and love and compassion. And it's more a practice to contemplate love and compassion. but it does this exchange. And then the suffering can be the suffering of people who are alive, the suffering of people who also died, who are not here. And there can be many generations between the object of suffering and now. And we have to remember, if somebody had a very strong epigenetic trait, let's say one of our ancestors 8 generations ago, we got 8 generations of people that have been affected. 99% of them we've never met. We don't know who they are even, right? And that's the interdependence between people. So when we really recognize this, and we are not self-focused, you see, when we work on an anxiety, oh, I want to feel better, I don't want to be anxious, so I can be more productive, we are focusing on ourselves. Forget about multi-generational. When we understand we are all in the same boat, we all experience anxiety, we all experience difficulties, we all want to be happy. And if we are happy, it doesn't reduce somebody else's ability to be happy. It's the other way around. We can help each other to be happy. Then we are no longer focusing on ourselves, which is really what the heart does. So when we have this as an approach, when I take even the classical Tonglen meditation and I turn it into a healing practice, which is not done traditionally, suddenly it helps. But the deeper thing, my deeper insight of open heart medicine, which I usually teach only in retreat, I kind of wrote a book about it, but didn't publish, but I will start teaching it because I'm getting older. You know, I'm going to teach it more and more freely, is that anyone who has ever affected us, that we are thinking about and taking in their suffering, is present in our cells, is present in our DNA. So there is a way to exchange this, not with the outside world, but with our own cells. And now we create a dialogue between our cells, our cell membranes, and our heart. Now that's very intense. The reason why I do it in retreat, because you cannot imagine what stuff comes up. Because you are basically scraping multi-generational traumas right out there. But in the right environment, it's hard to phantom the level of healing that happened in 3-4 days. Once I have the first 3-4 days to get people ready. Remarkable. And one of the main things that happens, which is very common, is people feel their heart again. You know, many people actually cannot feel their heart anymore. They don't feel the warmth of the heart as a protective measure, not because they don't have an amazing heart. We all have the same heart. You know, one of the greatest meditation masters in the Himalayas, you know, told me, it was translated from the local language, the heart has no concepts. The heart just takes in, accepts, and gives. That's our explanation. It's the head that puts concepts and traumas and epigenetics. So the moment we can connect with it, we can experience the multi-generational effect. And I mean, in my book, the example with my grandfather Isaac is that I had this intense pain from age 12, which caused scoliosis and really difficulty breathing. And then when I connected with the pattern that triggered it, and I went back to the Holocaust, and I had a deep acceptance, and I don't really share the details because of the sensitivity of people who got hurt in the Holocaust, but I had deep forgiveness, okay? But then I had the meditative ability to just totally let go and kind of rest in it. It disappeared spontaneously, never to come back. Now it's about a decade. Never to come back. Gone from 100 to zero.
Wow.
But
wow.
Again, as I mentioned, I was really healing my grandfather's trauma. I didn't know it until a short time before my mother at the grave. My grandfather died from stomach cancer. He couldn't stomach it at age 50. My grandmother, who was a warrior, died at age 98. Only on her grave, my mother told us that my grandfather had 10 siblings out of 12 that got, you know, murdered.
Wow.
Never talked about, okay? And then when I healed it, then my mother was able to see programs about the Holocaust for the first time in her life and talk about memories. I didn't tell her what happened to me. She healed from her trauma from her father. And so this is something that we all have the capability to do. And this is really the evolutionary part of life. This is not the maintenance of just staying alive and doing what we do. That we are in this world, we have the tools in our body to create this change in ourselves and in others. And it also makes life, we become more and more alive with every day that we get older, instead of becoming more and more, you know, oh my God, it hurts here and it hurts. No, this opens and opens and opens and opens and opens. It's amazing.
Is it we're running out of time, but someone that's watching this that really resonates with what you're saying, and in a way perhaps they realize that they've been an overcomplication of trying to figure it out too much cognitively, or trying to sort of, you know, move forwards and sort of work through it, and they see this point around this deeper heart connection, where do they start? We'll come in a minute to how people can find out more about you and your work. But what's a practical piece that people can start to lean into, coming closer to meeting themselves and meeting the world from that place?
So two simple things. When you wake up in the morning, you just sit up and you take a minute or two. And instead of just running out of bed, you just, you know, take three deep breaths and then just exhale. You can make the sound. And just let yourself open up. And then brings your hand to your heart and just breathe to your heart until you feel this warmth, because it's still warm in bed. You can be with a blanket and you feel this warmth going everywhere. And then it will change the rhythm of the day. At the end of the day, when you sit in bed, you review your day's activity. Anything that you have done to hurt other people, anything that have hurt you, you just let go. Anything that you have done that was beneficial for yourself and beneficial for others, you rejoice. And then you just visualize like white light coming from the top of your head when you inhale, coming to your heart. And if this is an unusual visualization, when you inhale, it feels this white light in your heart. And when you exhale, the heart contracts. And just like the heart sends blood, the heart sends the white light everywhere. Until your whole body becomes white light, it comes out of your skin and everything becomes white light. You don't have to see white light. Some people do. But some people just sense that you become lighter. And then you go to sleep. And then your sleep process comes from a very different place.
Yeah.
And you connect with whatever is your object of refuge, religion, belief, it doesn't matter. The mind function, our physiology is universal, regardless of our belief system. So these two things are really simple things. Why? Because they make your sleep different and they make your day different. And the whole thing is 5-6 minutes.
Yeah.
So very practical in our world.
I really like the I like the simplicity. And I also like in the more sophisticated piece you're talking about when you're working with people in retreats, that the destination that you're working to come to, it's not a transcendence, it's not an avoidance, it's not a trying to get rid of it. It's really a place of just landing, as I understand it, landing much more deeply and much more fully in oneself.
Yeah, you know, it's the word transcendence is popular. You know, I'm just a co-host of summit that is going to happen in September, from trauma to transcendence. But a little bit of a misunderstanding. Because everything is transcendence. Ordinary experiences are transcendence. And emotions like anger and anxiety are transcendence. The transcendence element is in them. We tend to separate between a bad experience and a blissful experience. But the quality, the underlying quality of impermanence is in everywhere. And that's the ultimate transcendence, is beyond experience. Because once you experience something, there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. And this quality is endless. It never stops. It is what they say, unborn and unceasing. It's always there. And you're right. It's really coming. It's coming home. It's coming home. It's peeling the mud out of the crystal. And suddenly, my God, the light comes and it doesn't hit the mud. It just shines in five colors. And that's really who we are. There's physiological healing and the whole concept of five elements and multiple medical system, including Greek medicine, which Western medicine is based on, you know.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Isaac, for people that want to find out more about you and your work, where is the best place for them to go and what can they find there?
Yeah, so they just go to Dr. Elias, DrElias.com. Then they'll get to my website. I'm shifting much more for my work with supplements that I'm put behind to this kind of work, to meditation and healing. And I'm a researcher, you know, as you can see, I can't not talk about the medical and health implication. It's a decades of training, and I'm developing a very effective new treatment for sepsis in the intensive care unit. It's another very different part of myself. But if they go there, then they'll get the information. And I offer once a month, you know, a webinar or either on health topics or on mind topics, but they always come together. We always connect them together. That's my life journey, and that's my commitment to share as long as I can, you know.
Yeah, beautiful. And also to recommend your book, The Survival Paradox, as well.
Yeah, definitely. I'm surprised how many spiritual teachers, I had no idea, honestly, and how many therapies to deal with traumas are actually relying on this book. So I really have to create a second edition soon.
Good. I look forward to that. Isaac, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate you, and I
love
you.
Thank you. Take care.